These mutant albino crocodiles may someday make their way to the Cave of Forgotten Dreams. What will they make of the drawings they find within? G'day, welcome to A Elitist Bastards Go to the Movies with Ken Hankey and the Asheville Trivia Champion, Justin Thalver. We're here at the Carolina Cinema Asheville, here in the Cinema Lounge, home of the Thursday Horror Picture Show and the Asheville Film Society. My name is Jeremy Dillon.
Mr. Jeremy Dillon, the Australian filmmaker, raconteur, bon vivant, man about town, and he is... in our area, because he is just such a hot elitist bastards fan that he had to come and see us in person. Now, in point of fact, he's here because he is making a documentary film.
That's correct. Not on us.
No. Unfortunately, I mean, he may get around to that and come to his senses and realize that we need a documentary, but he hasn't yet.
A documentary we won't sit through.
That's right.
So, what have we seen this week, fellas?
This is much better than
you. Much better. You need to stay here. I mean, I realize that probably is not in your plans, but...
I've got a plane to catch.
You're not leaving now. You're much better at this than we are, so you should stay forever.
Is that a threat?
I'm stuck here, so yes, it's a threat.
It's a threat, yeah. I mean, yeah.
What?
I don't know. What are we going to do now?
I don't know. I guess talk about movies.
Yeah, well, let's see. What should we talk about?
I don't know. What do you feel like, Ken?
Well, it doesn't matter what I feel like. It's what you want.
No, it doesn't.
That matters.
No, it doesn't.
Yes.
That's rarely the case, let's be honest.
Or else
I would not have watched Judy Moody.
I'm paying for it this week.
No, I doubt it.
Watch
Judy Moody and then tell me that after.
Jim Carrey and Penguins. Yeah, okay.
It's not going to... I would have traded it.
And then Jodie Foster's Beaver. You would tell me that this is a double threat.
Judy Moody. You haven't seen Judy Moody.
You're right, and I'm not going to.
Exactly.
All right. Well, why don't you go ahead and tell us about Judy Moody.
Who cares? I don't care. I don't want to revisit this stupid, dumb movie. You already made me watch it once. See, he's a sadist. He makes me revisit these things.
That's not sadism. That's therapy. Allows you to get it out, so to speak.
No one's going to watch this thing. I don't...
Well, no, it doesn't matter. You can still bitch about it.
I am bitching about it.
You know you're not. You haven't said anything about how bad it was.
I'm bitching about how I watched it.
Oh, well... This may be all we're going to get out of him.
So what is the film about, Justin?
About an hour and a half too long.
Strange. I think it only has an hour and a half running time.
That's peculiar.
Yes.
In that case, it's probably 2 hours too long.
Okay.
I should actually get 30 minutes of my life back. I should get an extra 30 minutes, I think. It's a really annoying kid movie. That's all you need to know. If you have annoying kids that like this kind of crap, then you should take them.
Well, considering the fact that some places have dropped it altogether and it has been cut to strictly matinees here come Friday,
yes.
I'd say offhand that not a whole lot of anybody was interested in seeing this thing.
I think it was indeed a bummer summer. The bummer summer of our discontent.
Yes. So since that's all we're going to get out of you about that...
I mean, you can go watch it and
no.
You can pontificate all you want.
I'm sure I could make up shit.
Well, go ahead.
Even without seeing it.
Do it.
But I'm not going to. No. It's not fair. It would not suit the integrity of the program.
So, how about we talk about something that all three of us have seen?
Sure.
Something good.
Steve in the shower. Or is that just me?
I've got to get those photos developed.
You shared the footage of it, but I didn't see it in person. It was pretty racy, too. And steamy. Of course, that might have been the water.
Steam Schoenfeld in there.
Showering Steve.
Anyway...
Showering Schoenfeld.
Midnight in Paris.
It is? Oh.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
It's the sequel to One Night in Paris, correct? The Paris Hilton sex tape?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
It's a prequel.
I don't think so. You've seen the goddamn thing. Why are you saying silly things like that? So, who wants to
What
wait?
Else am I supposed to say?
I
you
don't
want me
know.
To give, like, proper I'm, film criticism?
Well, even improper film criticism would be okay.
Well, that's what I'm providing.
I see. Okay, okay. That was not improper. That was more like impertinent.
Anyway.
Ill-chosen.
Ken, you loved this movie, didn't you?
Yes. That's all I have
you
to say.
You would marry this movie, given the chance, if you weren't already married.
That would be kind of tricky, I think, marrying a movie, huh?
Especially in North Carolina.
A screening room.
That may not be, you know, illegal in this state.
Your top 10 movies you would marry.
Top 10 movies I would marry. Oh, please.
Tommy, The Ruling Class.
Love Me Tonight.
Moulin Rouge.
Probably Across the Universe.
We'll see.
Shanghai Express. Midnight in Paris. I haven't been around Midnight.
Okay.
This would be like some sort of
Las Vegas. You date long term.
Yes, because this is more like some. This would be like some sort of Las Vegas wedding. I mean, you know, okay. I just saw the movie the other day, and you know, I haven't even seen it a second time.
So you would get some heavy petting with this movie.
Yeah, I would at least turn it over and give it a feel.
How's that for improper film criticism?
Well,
is this better? Is this what
yes,
you
that was
had
more.
In mind?
That was more improper of the sort of improper that I was of the mind of. Yes. Okay. So no, I think it's a fine film. I think it is one of the probably one of the great Woody Allen films. Again, it's only a few days since I've seen it, and I've only seen it the one time, so I'm prepared to have the luster dim on it a little bit, but right. I'm kind of doubtful. So
I wouldn't go quite that far, but I'm in the same boat. Like, I need to let it sit a little, and I might get to that point. I'm not ruling it out. So,
well, that's but, open-minded and decent of you.
Yes.
Woody will be pleased.
He should be.
Hey guys, what's the premise of Midnight in Paris?
Oh, okay. This is interesting. Because I saw this film,
yes,
not knowing a single thing about the this, not having seen a synopsis, having just seen the poster. So all I knew about it was called Midnight in Paris, had Owen Wilson and Michael Sheen in it, and was written and directed by Woody Allen. And I think that I enjoyed it more because of that. There are surprises. I don't know. I mean,
I think there's something
more
to be said for that. I mean, I think going into it knowing nothing might be the best thing.
So, Ken, how would you compare Midnight in Paris to Allen's recent works over the last decade?
Well, I'm kind of in an odd position here because I haven't disliked most of Allen's work in the last decade. I have liked, to one degree or another, I've liked Curse of the Jade Scorpion.
Yes.
I have liked Hollywood Ending, although not as much as Allen does, and I've actually tried it again because he thinks it's one of his most successful films.
That's interesting.
I thought so.
So how did you feel Owen Wilson did as a substitute Woody Allen?
I think he is the best substitute Woody Allen we've ever had. What do you think?
Just to think about that.
Jason Biggs.
Well, there's a lot of bad
Scarlett
ones.
Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, there's a lot of bad ones.
I like Scarlett Johansson as a surrogate Woody Allen.
I like Larry David. I know.
Yeah, Larry David is good.
Older.
I think he has a cameo in this, if I'm not mistaken. A very fleeting cameo towards the start of the film. They pan past him at a party.
It's possible.
I miss that if he is.
Yeah, I don't
have
a
to
real
work for it again.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to see the film again, so it's not like it's going to be a chore. Yeah,
so. Do you feel that there's? I feel like there's some parallels to Manhattan to an extent, not.
Well, there are definitely some stylistic ones.
Right.
But that's
and this
mostly
idea of this, mostly in the intro to Manhattan and the way that ties in, it's sort of the same.
Well, it has some opening. Of that, and it has a certain amount of the same thematic quality.
Right. And also this idea of him romanticizing it,
yes,
all out of proportion, sort of comes to mind.
This is so true, although, you know, in the end, the question in my mind is has he actually romanticized Paris all out of proportion, or has he only romanticized Paris
right
in the 20s all out of proportion, which is an entirely different thing. But then again, it's so easy to romanticize a time that you weren't alive and didn't know and can't actually know. I mean, that's
kind of the point of the film.
Yeah, I mean, that's very easy to do. I mean, anybody can do that until they start, you know, as Owen Wilson does, you know, there's no antibiotics. You know, I mean, you get to the point with me where, you know, there's no indoor plumbing. I'm out of this. And, no, you know, that's it. End of subject. Discussion is over. So I'm not going to be nostalgic for anything involving bedpans. Well, The Cave of Forgotten Dreams.
Yes.
Is the new Werner Herzog documentary.
In 3D.
In a cave in France. Where prehistoric man has drawn and painted various animals, including the woolly rhinoceros. I didn't even know there was such a thing as a woolly rhinoceros, much less that there were any of these in France. Did you?
I didn't know Bela Lugosi narrated this film, Ken.
Ah, well, there you go.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
So if they're prehistoric, what makes them prehistoric? Because there's obviously a historic record if they've painted these things
on
the walls.
Well, no, there's no written history, though. There's no...
But
you
it's
know,
drawn. That's historic. You didn't know there was a woolly rhinoceros.
Well, I didn't know that even from the drawings because they don't make them hairy. But they referred to it as a woolly rhinoceros. Wow.
Sounds like you're incredulous.
Well, the thing is, once you start doing that voice, it's really hard to stop.
It is. It's a bit intoxicating.
It's addictive, yeah. You know. I mean, it's. Anyway, I mean, it's. I understand the reason for shooting it in 3D, and for the parts in the cave, that probably is a really good thing. For the parts not in the cave, I could have lived without it. The more I think about it, though, the more I do believe that he is subverting the 3D and the spear chucking episode where he has the person chuck the spears away from the camera as opposed to toward it. I mean, that's a complete violation of the 3D code of conduct. But I mean, the whole thing is the thing that makes it interesting beyond seeing in these caves that, you know, you and I are never going to go wandering in these caves. My wandering days are over, but even if they weren't, they won't let you in them. I guess after they found that all those people breathing in the Lascaux caves, that was the end of letting people wander around aimlessly in these places. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I think is interesting about it, and it's just the selling point really, is that you are not going to look at these caves or these paintings and come away with anything like what Werner Herzog comes away with. Because normal people don't think like this.
There is a moment where they've got torches flickering on and off on the images, and the voiceover comes on. These lights flicking across these cave paintings, it is almost as if this is the birth of cinema. Cut to Fred Astaire in Swing Time.
Yes.
For about 25
Dancing
seconds.
With the Shadows from Bojangles in Harlem. I mean, it's. I would never have made this leap.
Or, indeed, the connection to the mutant albino crocodiles.
That's true. I mean, I'd never have gotten to the mutant albino crocodiles. Whether or not these damn things even exist, this is unclear, or if they exist in France, or where the hell he found them.
I'm not sure. My problem with this film, and I did find bits of it quite interesting, was that it's just not Herzog-y enough for me. Like, it doesn't live up to Werner Herzog's 3D documentary about ancient French cave paintings. It's like Hobo with a Shotgun. Hobo with a Shotgun is exactly what you'd want Hobo with a Shotgun to be, but this isn't what you'd want Werner Herzog's 3D cave painting movie to be.
To some degree, I agree with that. However, at the same time, I find the further away I get from it, the more I do like it. But there's also the fact that, goodness knows, the people we saw it with were just absolutely waxing rhapsodic over having seen it. So, I mean, I really think that it's obviously kind of an individual response thing. And we just didn't respond quite the same way. I just find it amusing that, you know, what, 5 minutes after I say this thing needs Nick Cage and hallucinatory iguanas, all of a sudden we have albino crocodiles. I mean, if they brought in Nick Cage, that would have sealed the deal right there, but he didn't, so.
That was an oversight, I think.
I think that was an oversight. More Herzog movies should have Nick Cage. I think that's a...
Yes, that's very true.
You know, a plus. Anyway, I would recommend the film because you're... Again, if only to see the damn cave stuff, because you're not going to. And to see it in 3D, it does capture the fact that these things are not painted on flat walls. They're painted on... These things curve. I mean, it's not... That really is part of the appeal of the drawings, is that they are not flat. It almost gives them a kind of depth.
Are we talking about Super 8?
We're getting ready to.
Okay. I saw enough of it to know I really don't have a desire to watch the rest, so.
Yeah, well.
That's where I stand.
I've seen all of Super 8, and it's okay.
If you'd watched half an hour of it, you had the option to stop.
No, I'd have probably watched the whole thing.
Okay.
But, you know, I had the distinct advantage, and this
is... If you had watched half an hour of it and had to go watch Judy Moody, would you have returned to finish
maybe
it?
To wash my eyes out, you know. I mean, it might be a consideration. I mean, its depiction of kids making a Super 8 film is fairly accurate. I mean, you know, having been there, done that, I mean, there's some technical flaws in what they're showing you, but I'm not really surprised by that, but...
Are you saying J.J. Abrams?
Am I saying...
Doesn't know how to...
Make a Super 8 movie? That's quite possible.
Okay.
I don't know. But, I mean, there's a lot of stuff...
Because you can't do lens... Can you do lens flare on a Super 8?
Sure, you can do a lens flare. Then it's
okay,
got a lens.
Then,
you know.
Then he should be fine.
You can flare a lens in him anytime you want, you know. That's not hard to do. All you got to do is hit it with a light.
He's probably too busy doing that
to learn how to... My biggest problem with his use of it in this is that he has lens flare in scenes where there's no obvious light causing it.
Right.
I honestly think that he's got somebody standing off to the side with a flashlight just to hit the lens so there'll be a blue bar across the image. You saw it.
I did. I liked it more than either of you. I mean, it is ersatz Spielberg, but as that goes, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, but you see, the whole thing about it is that the last thing on God's earth I want is even real Spielberg,
yes.
Much less imitation.
Yes, I'm well aware of that. And
yeah.
I have a pretty low tolerance for precocious children in films, and they did not annoy me in this.
They didn't annoy me, but I really thought that they... And it grieves me to say Judd Apatow would have understood this. And these people do not understand that part of this whole thing where... The one kid is upset over the situation with the girl. It's not just over the situation with the girl. It's a situation with him. And they just immediately bring in... You know, it starts to sound like that. And it's like, well, I only invited her because I liked her. And now, of course, she likes you. And so, you know, the whole thing has just been, oh, God, don't possibly get any sort of depth into the emotions going on here or the confusion of childhood. Just leave it on this... Let's put it on a, let's set up a love triangle. Except there's no triangle because as soon as the chubby kid finds out, he's, you know, just drops her. You know, but the movie's big about setting up things and then dropping it, which, as you mentioned, the cube goes through this guy's wall, and then we know, except for the fact that we see it.
Yeah.
Nobody else seems to worry about this cube again.
Or that there's a hole in your wall. If you're a kid and you've got a hole in your wall and you've got to explain that to your... Dad who has obvious issues.
Isn't he missing by that point?
Is he?
I don't know.
Maybe.
His structure isn't.
Yeah, and why isn't the kid, like, worried about where his dad's at?
Well, I don't know.
And he's got a hole in the wall.
One thing I did like particularly was the opening two shots, which establish in about 45 seconds that this kid's mother's died with no dialogue. I thought that was very efficient.
Which would be fine, although I would really like to... Did you ever completely understand just exactly what the maybe kind of sort of culpability of the girl's father was in his mother's death?
Yeah.
Because I never understood what it was.
He was drunk. He didn't show up to work. The kid's mother took his shift and got killed in the accident.
Oh, so you call in to work and somebody dies on your shift, that's your fault.
Yeah. Well, that's what it was in the film.
Okay.
I'd be more pissed at my work for calling me in.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, I think that's...
Like, no, I'm not even supposed to be here.
No, I'm going home.
Now
screw
I'm dead.
You. Yeah, now I'm dead. What are you going to do about that?
Here's my question, and I haven't seen the movie, and I talked to you a bit about this. Maybe Jeremy can enlighten me as well. My feeling was, seeing enough of the film, and this being, like, fake Spielberg, I get the impression that Spielberg would have made a creature that is this unmemorable.
This is a pretty lousy monster.
But, visually? I mean,
yeah.
Visually, he's only in it for about
that's part
minute
of the
and a half,
problem,
2 minutes.
I think. I mean, because they built up everything about this movie and the trailer and the whole ad campaign has built up that it's got this monster that we haven't gotten a look at. And this is just, it's Cloverfield all over again, and the monster's just as dumb looking as the one in Cloverfield.
Well... No, I disagree. I feel like Cloverfield was all leading up to the monster, whereas this film, that wasn't really the point. That was just, like, the monster was a MacGuffin. It was
it's the
point threat
of the
off
ad
stage.
Campaign.
And it's just a smaller version of the Cloverfield monster.
Plus the monster, they play really fast and loose with what this thing is. It looks like a spider for 9/10 of the film, and then all of a sudden, it's got two legs. And also they want us to be sympathetic for this thing that hangs people upside down and eats them. This is really... This is hard for me to do.
We hang things upside down and eat them.
Well, I know that, but it doesn't necessarily translate into... This is like people... This is like the whole argument that the zombies in the Romero pictures want to coexist with us. No, they don't want to coexist with us. They want to eat us.
Well, this thing doesn't want to do either. It just wants to leave.
Well, that's the story, yes.
And then it does at the end.
And how?
They did that in District 9, and it was really good.
And how does it leave, exactly? How does that work? Explain that to me. Can you explain that ending?
Yeah, they explain that...
The world's largest water cannon fires him back into space, essentially, is what you're saying.
No.
It'd be better if it was a potato gun.
The potato gun
a giant
would be more
potato.
Believable.
John Spud gun. The Asheville Film Society, which I believe is also going to be here in the Cinema Lounge at the Carolina Asheville tonight, well, and next Tuesday, obviously, at 8 o'clock.
Right, and next Tuesday at 8 o'clock, what are we showing? It should be on the piece of paper. Oh. I mean,
you're showing the Mae West film, I'm No Angle.
Angle?
Yes. With a hypotenuse or acute...
Oh, you know, I saw that movie Angles and Demons once. It was,
It's a bit rough around the edges for me.
Illuminati. Okay. Anyway.
I got that. Ken didn't seem to catch it.
Don't worry, Steve can cut it out of the podcast. So, I'm No Angel.
Yes, I'm No Angel. Yes, okay. I've never accused you of being one. I probably wouldn't have any truck with you if you were. So. Anyway, I'm No Angel, which is the third Mae West film, and it's the biggest Mae West film, the most elaborate Mae West film, and some would say it is the best. It certainly is one of the two contenders for the most Mae West-like Mae West film. We've already shown the other one, which was She Done Him Wrong. This is Paramount's follow-up to She Done Him Wrong, which has no relation to the film, except that it's Mae West. It's also almost 20 minutes longer. It's much more elaborate. They've really poured some money into this one because She Done Him Wrong had saved the studio from bankruptcy earlier that year. So, you know, it was reasonable that they should do this. Once again, you've got Cary Grant as her leading man, although he doesn't come into the film until like 20, 30 minutes. The rest of the cast is kind of interesting. You've got the... You've got Edward Arnold, who is almost a star, and at that time was being groomed as a star, which I've never quite understood exactly what they thought they were doing there. You've got the great Gregory Ratoff as the shyster lawyer Benny Pinkowitz. As in, hey, operator, I don't accept reverse charges. you know, a wonderful thing where she phones him, of course, using a phone where she doesn't have the number and she doesn't have a dial on it anyway. So she's, giving out P. Now, P like in pansy. I N K W W like in witch. No, witch. Dame misunderstood me. You know, it's a lot of fun. It's the film from which the line "Beulah, peel me a grape" comes. It has some nice songs. It definitely has some hard to imagine, even in a pre-code film, things that got past the censors. It's pure Mae West. What more can you want?
What is upcoming, Ken?
Well, let Jeremy ask that question.
Oh.
Okay, if you've got any puns that you've been saving up since the Justin Bieber movie came out, now's the time to use them.
I've already used some of them.
Because Jodie Foster's Beaver is going to be opening in Nashville next week.
Crowds of people will be either pleased or appalled by the opening of...
They should put that on the marquee.
Yes, by the opening of Jodie Foster's Beaver.
The Beaver.
Jodie Foster's The Beaver, yes. And starring Mel the Gibson in his attempt at...
You want to do a Mel Gibson impersonation?
I can't do a Mel Gibson impersonation.
If only we had an Australian. We could do a Mel Gibson impersonation.
That's true.
But Mel Gibson doesn't have an Australian accent. He was born in America.
Well, that's not my fault.
Just say some racist things.
You know, just say some sort of anti-Semitic, homophobic rant.
And he's got a Cockney accent in this film.
Well, no, he doesn't. His beaver does, so to speak. Anyway, that's opening.
Let's hope it's really bad so you can say this beaver stinks to high heaven.
Yes, that would be... I'm sure that, I've tried to get it out of my system today with the Weekly Reeler title. Okay. But, I probably...
Can't shake the beaver, can you?
No. Cave a forgotten beaver probably isn't quite enough to...
mutant
albino beaver. Wow. The mind reeled, but I don't believe that is going to be involved in this. What else is opening there?
Cave of Forgotten Dreams.
Green Lantern.
Which we've talked about, Cave of Forgotten Dreams, so that's... however, we probably should note that is not going to be in town for more than 2 weeks tops. And I think it's a little short
like
of that.
Days.
Yeah. So if you want to see it, and you probably should, you want to see it soon.
In 3D. There's a chance it'll end up in 2D, but what's the point?
It will have less point, at least for part of the film.
Although some of those whip pans will be a little easier to take.
That's true.
Just pretend it's in 3D. And what else? We have Green Lantern.
We have Green Lantern coming up, which a movie that is predicated on the notion that people will pay money to see Ryan Reynolds star in a movie about a lower-tier comic book character that nobody has much interest in.
Well... No one had much interest in Iron Man before that came out, and it did all right.
Robert Downey Jr.
Ryan Reynolds. Now let's get honest here. Aside from which, the stills from the movie all look like crosses between Excalibur and a cartoon.
You say that like it's a bad thing.
It looks like a cartoon.
Are you saying is it on par with Borman? Should Borman have made the Green Lantern?
No.
Green Lantern 2, The Heretic.
That's right. Green Heretic 2, The Lantern. That would be good, too.
And then Ken has the fortune of watching...
Mr. Popper's Penguins.
Well, I, as the only one here, has actually made a film which features penguins.
That's true. You did, yes.
Although Benjamin Snodgrass and the Cauldron of Penguins had far fewer penguins, it didn't have Jim Carrey in it, although it did have Stephen Fry, so depending on your persuasion.
Yes.
Wait, did you say Stephen Fry?
Yes.
You put him in the same category? Jim Carrey's no Stephen Fry, sorry.
Well, I wasn't going to say that.
Well, you're allowed to. Are you?
It's your movie.
Yeah.
You have to pimp that movie.
Oh, and I don't have Carly Gugino.
Jeremy's trying not to burn bridges, is basically.
I think that's what it is, yeah. Someday you may want to use Jim Carrey.
Well, at least I'll want to use Kylie Jenner.
We will not delve into the hidden.
More, he might need more penguins at some point.
Yes, he might need more penguins, and you definitely don't want to alienate the penguin population. My big thing about this movie is this is a children's book, which is, I don't know if it still is. When I was a kid, it was like a standard. They read it to you in school. And I liked it so much that I bought it in sixth grade, and I remember not liking it nearly as much by that point.
How will it hold up now?
Well, I don't think I'm going to find out, because I don't think it's going to have a damn thing to do with it except penguins and a man named Mr. Popper.
Sounds good enough.
So, you know,
Ken? It's the two basic ingredients for
Jim Carrey as Mr. Popper and penguins.
Yes. Well, it's called Mr. Popper's Penguins.
Simians.
I don't know. That would be a completely different movie.
Mr. Simon Simmons.
There you go. See, that would have been a much better concept.
Paul Simon?
Yes.
Yes.
Paul Simon in a CGI kids adventure film.
Yeah, you know, me and Giacomo down by the school yards.
Written by David Simon.
Yeah. And does that bring us to an end? To closure? Does that finish this week's podcast?
Yes, I think so.
Which is done by... myself, and I'm Ken Hanke, and
I'm Justin Sowler,
and we are the movie critics for the Mountain Express, who are the fine, fine, upstanding, noble, generous folks who allow us and make this possible.
Indeed.
We also have,
and then of course we have, with our special guest, young Jeremy.
Good day.
You know, it's like you push a button and he says it.
That's not a knife. This is a knife.
There we go. And,
do you have any Yahoo Serious quotes?
Can you sing Skippy the Bush Kangaroo?
The Bush Kangaroo?
Yeah.
That's a little before my time, I'm afraid.
Ah, well.
I've been debating whether or not I should reveal the secret of Miami Steve, the Colonel Schoenfeld's nicknames.
Yeah, because we don't understand them, but we're dumb.
Well, they didn't actually occur to me as being particularly mysterious when I put them in. Would you prefer to leave them mystery, or would you like me to reveal?
I kind of want you.
I want to know one way or the other. We don't have to record.
But I'm not sure that the public is ready for this information.
See,
I think
the story
we should wait
for
until
which.
Until
it's like
we're
the giant rat of Sumatra.
Yes. For which the world is not yet prepared. So,
Steve
Schoenfeld, who is our producer, coherer, and the giant rat of Sumatra of our dreams.
He will remain cloaked in mystery.
That's right. Because the world is not yet
ready. Who knows what evil lurks in the heart of Steve?
Well, I've heard
I've got a pretty good idea, frankly.
I've seen him at trivia.
Okay, that's enough. Stop this nonsense.